And welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we're going to pick up where we left off before we went to commercial break and continue with our conversation with Brian Cuban, talking about his book, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder.
Talking about, you know, how basically you were attacked, you know, coming home from school one day.
That's right. I call it the day of the gold pants, because Mark, my older brother, had given me the shiny gold kind of pre-disco disco pants, and I wore them all the time because, you know, I love Mark. You know, we're very close, and I'd wear them to junior high. Here they call it middle school, all the time. But Mark wasn't a big guy, so they were tight on me, but I didn't care. I wore them, and my stomach hung out over them, and the kid teased me.
Proud, your big brother gave
it. Yeah, and the kids teased me, and they were shiny satin. You know, they looked goofy. My butt looked like 15 cats in there because they were so tight. And one day I'm walking home from school, sort of hanging around the group of popular kids like I always did, and you let them make fun of you, and you let them abuse you, just hoping that you'll get some acceptance. And, you know, and you don't, but you just keep hanging around, hoping to catch some of that popularity. They start making fun of them. Ah, Cuban, your stomach's hanging out. You need a bra. Get a bra. You know, the man boob things when you're young and you're heavy. And then all of a sudden, one of them starts pulling at them. Then all of a sudden, they all join in and start pulling at them. Next thing I know, they're tearing them off me. Then they ripped them into shreds and threw them in the street, leaving me in my tidy whities at 11 years old to walk a mile home to my house. It was so traumatic that I could go to that point in Pittsburgh, PA, where I grew up, Mount Lebanon, and show you exactly where it happened today.
What did you do when you got home?
I threw the scraps of the pants away, totally ashamed, and hoped it would never come up, and it didn't. Totally ashamed, one, that, you know, that I was, you know, they had validated everything my mom told me. I was a fat, dumb bunny who couldn't stand up for himself. I had disappointed my older brother who had given me these pants. I had disappointed my parents in not being able to stand up for myself. And I had become what I had been told, you know, this fat, stupid kid. And that was a pivotal moment in how I would see myself.
What gave you the courage to finally stand up and to be able to share your story? Because I would assume, Brian, that would be really scary. I mean, you share some very intimate things about your journey and what a 30-year secret as far as with some of the eating disorders, the depression, and even alcoholism.
My aha moment was I was standing in the parking lot of a local psychiatric facility for the second time, going there for the second time, and I'm standing in that parking lot, and my girlfriend, who had stuck with me, we've been together almost 9 years now, was crying because I had been unfaithful in an alcoholic blackout. And I'm thinking, you know what? I don't have another trip back here. I'd also had a previous near suicide attempt, only to be saved by my brothers at the last second, literally at the last second. And I thought to myself, standing in that parking lot, she's crying, I'm thinking she's gone. I don't have another trip back here. I'll be dead. You know, but what scared me worse than that? The thought that I was about to lose my family. Because family may love you unconditionally, but there are limits on their willingness to watch you destroy yourself if you're not going to put yourself in a position of recovery. And Mark, Jeff, my dad, you know, that they had never said those things to me, but I just knew that I was reaching that moment. And that just terrified me, because our father raised the three of us brothers, brothers, brothers. He would joke. He'd go, wives may come and go, and for me, they certainly have. One more and I get a free set of steak knives. One more. They say, wives may come and go. Girlfriends may come and go. You know, you hope they don't, but when push comes to shove, all you have is each other. And no matter what happens in your lives, no matter where you go, no matter what's going on, be there. Call. Love. And that stuff, he would pound that into us, and that stuck with us. You know, it's not an accident that all these years later we all live within a mile of each other in Dallas, Texas, including my father. Right. And that thought that I was about to lose what my father had stressed so heavily terrified me into taking that first step into recovery. That first small step, the next day, I walked into my shrink, who I'd been seeing for a few years, lying, just depression over marriages, give me medication. No, he didn't know about the eating disorders. He didn't know about, you know, the drug abuse. And people, how could he not know? Well, you know, shrinks aren't clairvoyant. You know, if you're not honest with them, they can only deal with honesty. And it's kind of funny. People say, well, why wouldn't you be honest with your shrink? Well, shame knows no hourly rate. Okay, when you are ashamed, you don't care. You're not even going to, you know, you may not even confide in your treatment provider. So I walked in and I told him about all these things, had a good cry. Didn't tell him about the eating disorder, though. I'd rather admit I was a cocaine addict than had an eating disorder. That's how shameful it was. But it was the first step in recovery, the honesty, getting honest about where I was presently. The next day was even harder. I went over to my father's house, knocked on his door, walking distance from me, still lives now. And, you know, that back then he was in his 70s. I said, Dad, you know, I need to talk to you. I sat on the couch with him and told him everything but the eating disorder. Told him about all this stuff, the near suicide attempt. And he said, Brian, come move in with me. I love you. We'll get through this. I was that 11-year-old little boy wanting to have that talk with his father all those years ago, but he was too afraid, you know, to have, because he didn't know what the response would be, because he was so ashamed. And I got the response that I wanted. And that was the next step, getting honest with family. And it just, from there, you know, there a lot of therapy. I'm still on therapy today. I'm still on medication today. A lot of therapy. A lot of steps forward, a lot of steps backwards. Obviously, I went in a 12-step because, you know, it was kind of funny. My psychiatrist was like, well, what do you want to do? Well, I want to live. And he goes, well, we have a problem here. You're a freaking alcoholic drug addict. Okay, we can't address all these other issues until you get that under control, right? You have to have a clear head. So we talked about rehab, this, that, and we decided I would go in a 12-step. And I walked in a 12-step and never looked back. Never look back. I just had my 7-year sober birthday, April 8th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I never looked back from I never engaged in eating disorder behavior again. Mm-hmm. I never engaged in drug abuse. I never engaged in alcohol. And those things all got easier as I became more accepting of myself and learned to love myself for who I was, a quiet, shy kid. I didn't need to be anything else but that, and that's okay.
That's remarkable, because you really retrained your inner voice and just been able to arrest those demons that had tormented you for so many years. I mean, you have come such a long ways.
And I have a long ways to go. I mean, there are still thoughts. People all ask me all the time, are you cured? I'm like, well, what does cured mean to you? Do I still have thoughts about bulimia? Sure. If I eat a full meal and I'm, you know, whatever, do those thoughts go through my head? Sure. Do I have other thoughts? Sure. But how I respond to those thoughts has changed. That's what's changed, and that's through a lot of therapy. So it's an ongoing process. And again, teaching people about my recovery and hoping they can take something from that. I'm not a treatment provider. I'm not a psychiatrist. If people can take something from my recovery that will help them step forward, even if it's just one little step, and drop that wall of shame, that's all I can hope for.
I have to ask you, too, because there's a wonderful picture in your book when the Dallas Mavericks won the 2011 championship, and your father and of course, your older brother, Mark, and Jeff. What was going through your mind when what an incredible moment for the Cuban family.
Being proud of Mark. I mean, if it wasn't for Mark, I'm not, as we talked about, I'm not a huge NBA fan. I love the Mavs because I love my brother, and I've always been clear about that. You know, if Mark didn't own the Mavs, now if he sold them now, I'd probably, you know, obviously I've developed an allegiance. But, you know, I was happy for Mark, and that's what, you know, that's what that moment was all about. I was happy for my father, for being proud of my, you know, his son. I was happy for my brother. I was happy for my family. That's what that was to me.
Was there any temptation there when you were in Miami to, I mean, kind of regress back to any of those old behaviors at all?
It's funny you bring that up, because Miami was a huge parting spot for me for going down there and doing drugs back in the day. And no, and that's actually why I didn't go down there in 2006, okay, because I was afraid of that. But no, there was none at all. We actually went to the after party at Live Nightclub in Miami. There was marijuana smoke everywhere. There was alcohol everywhere. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend and I had a great time. Yeah, that's Because it's, you know, there are different types of addicts. It's, you know, the basics are all the same, but I don't have any history in my family. It was never about that. It was about me seeing myself in a certain way. What destructive behavior could I engage in to gain acceptance? If I no longer feel I need to be accepted, you know, other than for who I am, those thoughts go away.
So, Brian, if someone's tuning in or watching us right now by television, what advice would you give if they know somebody that is struggling with, you know, eating disorders, alcoholism? And we all have had to experience that within reach of someone in our family or friends.
Whether it's eating disorders, alcoholism, drug addiction, the old saying is true. People have to want to help themselves. But what you can do is educate yourself and put them in a position to recover if they choose to help themselves. That's all you can do. Whether that's by just being there, developing a relationship of love, of trust, and just being ready to listen.
But sometimes it's so hard because you feel so helpless because you want to fix that person.
It is.
You're not willing to do it.
That's right. And if it's addiction, if it's alcoholism or addiction, there are groups, support groups for people going through that. If it's an eating disorder, you can go to the National Eating Disorder website and they have great resources on how to deal with friends who may have an eating disorder and you don't know what to say.
Of course, the title of the book is Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder, having a candid conversation with Brian Cuban. And of course, where can they go and get a copy of the book?
You can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. It's not available in bookstores. You have to go to one of those two places.
I would highly encourage you. I don't know what's on your calendar and schedule, but I would love for you to release a book specifically geared towards bullying, because I thought you really talked about it. And that's really been at the forefront nationally, especially what went down in the Miami Dolphins locker room this past fall.
I agree. I mean, and I wrote a blog about that called I Am Jonathan Martin. And even, you know, adults in certain situations, adults can be bullied. You know, if there's a power differential at the workplace, if there is repetitive conduct, you know, the adult bullying can occur. Now, I've also been an advocate of the fact that, you know, because someone says mean things to you on Twitter or Facebook does not mean you're being bullied. Okay, because you can always get off Twitter or Facebook. Okay, but if you were in a special relationship, a marriage, a workplace situation where you can't just quit, there can be bullying in those situations. And I identified and empathized a lot of with what Jonathan Martin went through. And for people to say because you're 6'5 and 300 pounds or because you're in a violent sport that you can't be bullied, it's come on. That buys into every bullying stereotype and every male-female stereotype there is.
Absolutely. You know, the final thought for you, too, is that I would just, you know, share with all of our parents that are listening, it's so important that we choose our words wisely. And you were talking about that dynamic, your relationship with your mom, and it just seems like it's great that you have that understanding of where she's come from and what she's navigated through, because hurting people hurt people.
Absolutely. My mom has been a big part of my recovery.
Yes.
We have a very good relationship.
Wonderful.
Now. I was very lucky. Unlike a lot of families, I had a mother who was willing to explore where she was. Not about fault. It's about understanding. And once I was able to understand her life, I was able to forgive. Forgiveness is a huge part of recovery. It was for me. And I think it is for a lot of people.
It is a wonderful book titled Shatter Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. And Brian, it's such a pleasure and
honor.
Thank
you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on your Mavericks.
Thank you. Yes.
The playoffs.
Yes.
So
yes.
Excited.
Yes.
Hope you enjoyed that special interview with Brian Cuban, successful lawyer, activist, television host, and now a best-selling author who, of course, released his book 7 months ago and memoir where he courageously shares his personal account and struggles with eating disorders, BDD, and addiction. And I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of the book, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. Also, a very special thank you to all of our guests in our lineup tonight. Bob Berry Jr. with News Channel 4 out of Oklahoma City, getting you set and ready for the Oklahoma City Thunder and Memphis as they will be set to tip on Saturday night at Chesapeake Arena. Rodney Fisher from RF Sports, rfsports.com. Chris Donnelly, How the Yankees Explain New York, wonderful book, you got to go and get it, and Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We also had a very special interview and exclusive with Dallas Mavericks' Brandon Wright. Join us online at eradiosports.com, and always for the biggest and the best in sports, YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive.